Hello, everyone from WUF. Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in our holiday season. I'm the Reverend Tracy Springberry. We're here doing our third live service. If you want, you can just say hi to each other in the chat. That's one of the great things about these live services. So if you can, I guess there's this thing about you have to have a Google password, a Google email to say hi in the chat, I think. I don't know everything about that. But if you want to, just say hi to each other in the chat, because we're all together here this morning. And I can actually see what you say, I think. It doesn't seem to be actually happening for me this morning. But you can say hi to each other. And so it's like whispering to your neighbor. And I'll give you just a moment. And I'm going to be talking, and you can do it then, too. And I just wanted to let you know, and you probably know outside your window, that it's just a foggy, rainy day here, which is really appropriate, because this is the WUF holiday season. And I also just wanted to let you know that we're here, me and my daughter, alone at WUF, which is really appropriate during the rising COVID season. I didn't want to let you think that we were here with a whole crew of people, because we're not. We're alone, following the governor's orders. And I just want to let the chime start our services together. So we have some people saying hi in the chat, which is good to see you all, Howard and Suzanne and John and Devon. So we're entering our services together during an incredibly difficult holiday season. We're not going to be able to do the usual things that we do together during these holidays, together as a religious community, and I'm sure you're not going to be able to do the usual things that you do with your families and friends during this holiday season, maybe the people that you work with or your neighbors, all those traditions that we're so used to and hold us during these holidays. We're also at a time of high national grief and personal grief for all that's been lost over these 9 months. And the COVID deaths and infection rates are simply breathtaking right now. And we're told by the people that pay attention to these things that those might indeed increase. And so it's a time of real pain and hardship for so many people. And we're again in a moderate lockdown and staying close to home and not being able to do the things that we're used to, both because of the governor's orders and because of our own safety and because the weather is holding us inside. The future is so uncertain, as it has been for months and months and months. What we do and how we do them is open to possibilities. That is the gift of uncertainty, actually. That's what darkness is. Darkness is a time that we have to sense and feel our way, stumble, make mistakes. We get to try again. It can be so hard in the dark, because you don't know where you're going, and we all hate that so much, right? But it's a time to laugh with each other, too, as a community, and be so very generous in spirit with one another. It's a time of great humor and a time to reach out, however you can do that. And so I ask that of you during this holiday season, for all of us who are trying new experimental ways of worshiping, new ways of being together as a community, that we have humor with one another, that we're generous with one another, that we try new things, that we see possibilities in this dark, that we sense and that we have future, and that we're together in this time. And so that's what I ask of us, that we bring that joy and that sense of possibility to this time of darkness. And so I have a couple of things that I want to share with you about what we're doing this holiday season when we can't be together. There's now a lovely Christmas tree outside our door and lights that the elves have put around our building that sprinkle in the darkness. And we ask you to come to WUF and get an ornament and put one on the tree so that we can exchange ornaments with one another. We also have the Christmas Eve candles here. And we ask you to pick up a candle, one for each member of your family. Take it home and take a picture of you with lit candles in your yard or in your home and sent those pictures. And there's information in your in a letter from me, in a letter from Hannah. You'll see it in the e-blast. You're going to send them to Jane Transier, and we're going to take all those pictures of you with your lit candles and put it in the slideshow and sing Silent Night to each other. So please come get your candles and exchange your ornaments and be with us this wolf season. And if you're a newcomer to our community, we welcome you. And please go to our webpage and contact our administrator to get on our mail list so you can join us for coffee hour and get engaged with our small groups, which is really where our congregation is thriving right now. And so please, everybody, come to coffee hour. It's going to be so good to see you. We'll be able to join joys and sorrows and talk to each other, not just in the chat. So I will light the chalice this morning. Let me move my computer so you can see our chalice. Maybe I'll just lift the chalice. That might be easier for you all. And our chalice lighting words are from the Reverend Barbara Stevens, who is a friend of mine and a minister here in Portland. Let this be a time of warm and gentle silence, the silence that soothes and comforts the wounded, the silence that yields insights into heart and soul, the silence that calms, the silence that listens, the silence that speaks, the silence that renews. Let this be a time of warm and gentle silence. Let us say our words of affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. I invite you into a darkness meditation. I invite you into a time of quietness. Just relax your body. Straighten your spine and let your hands relax gently in your lap or on the couch or wherever you are. And just close your eyes. And let out all the distraction of light and images. And let's just take a couple of deep, slow breaths. Notice what all your other senses are telling you. Maybe you feel some pressure in your back or in your sitting bones, or your body comes in contact with your chair or your couch or your floor. Maybe you have feelings of tightness in your shoulders, in your jaw. Just try to relax by noticing any tension that you feel in your neck, in your belly. Just soften your eyes. We often hold a lot of tension around our eyes. Just feel your face floating. Let it all relax. You may feel strange sensations like tingling in a muscle or on your skin. Just feel it. Let it go. Turn your attention to the sounds around you. What do you notice? Maybe you notice your own breathing. Is your stomach growling? Maybe you hear someone else in your home. They're breathing. They're moving around. Maybe there's a car passing on the street. Turn your focus inward. There may be thoughts flowing in your mind. Oh, just let them float by. Don't grasp them. Don't let them get your attention. Just let them go. Feelings may bubble up. maybe in your belly or in your chest. Just let them go. You don't need to name them or add a story to them. Just let them go. Accept them for what they are. Now just let your body be filled with darkness and silence. Oh, like a deep, dark night in the wilderness. Oh, take such comfort in that stillness, in that darkness. It is so restful. It is the place you have come from the womb. It was dark in the womb, and it was a good place. Don't try to make anything happen. Just rest deeply into this darkness, knowing that you are safe. You can just simply be here. You don't have to do anything. You can just breathe. Just breathe. Sense the healing powers of your body. Your body can restore damaged cells, create new healthy cells. Acknowledge the creative powers of our minds and hearts. From that mysterious, dark region deep within you comes all poetry, all music. From that dark emergence, all sculpture, all dance, all the art and cultures of all of humanity, all the unsolved mysteries of science reside in this dark, dark, deep place in ourselves. Continue to be with your breath. Just notice it coming in and out. The breath comes from the world and goes into the darkness of your being and returns to the world. Feel gratitude for all the darkness within and without. Amen. You may open your eyes and return to the presence of the wolf community. This is the time when we put names in the chat of people who we are holding deeply in our hearts today. And I have some sad news to share with everyone in this community. One of our founding members, who was going to be 103 on December 20th, Harrison Platt, passed away yesterday. Or actually on Friday, I'm sorry. The days blurred together. He passed away on Friday. He was surrounded by his family. He'd been ailing for a while, but it was very short at the end. And he had a long, good life. But I wanted all of you to know that passing of, a very important person through all of Wolf's history. So take a moment and put names of people in the chat who you are holding in your hearts today.
Good morning. My name is Brad Hewitt. My pronouns are he and him, and it is my privilege to be your lay leader this morning. I have a reading from the Buddhist teacher, Stephanie Nobel. Dark is the rich, fertile earth that cradles the seed, nourishing growth. Dark is the soft night that cradles us to rest. Only in darkness can stars shine across the vastness of space. There is mystery woven in the dark, quiet hours. There is magic in the darkness. We are born of this magic.
When I was 7, my family moved to the country where my parents worked to live lightly on the land. Part of the plan was to have outdoor composting toilets, since my parents found septic systems to be a waste of good fertilizer. These turned out to be almost exactly like outhouses to my 7-year-old mind. Besides being completely embarrassing if you wanted to invite a friend over, The problem was, there was problems with midwinter visits, which required boots and a coat, and there was also the problem of night visits, which required climbing out of bed, creeping through the house, and then dashing madly through the dark. I remember one particularly traumatizing period when I was reading the set of books that had these creepy, horrifying stories with weird, haunting, unexplainable experiences, which they claimed were absolutely true. And so I would read late into the night, and then I would push the book aside, turn off the light, and just lay rigid with fear in my bed. I still remember that feeling. And then I would have to go. And then I would just wait and wait and wait, hoping that I would fall asleep, hoping it wasn't really true that I had to go. But every time, my body would demand relief. And so I would get slowly out of bed. And I would rush through the door. And as I dashed into the night, my heart pounding, I would just feel the creepy eyes of something watching me that wanted to hurt me. The dark was absolutely terrifying. As a culture, Americans are afraid of the dark. Since it became possible around 100 to 120 years ago to truly light things up, we have worked so hard to banish the dark of the night. In many ways and places, we have been completely successful. When dark descends, we light up our homes, our streets, and our empty buildings. Cities seen from above are bright 24 hours a day. When I was a child in our little piece of land, this wasn't true. We had no electricity. We just had kerosene lanterns with wicks and faded lights of DC circuits like those in old RVs. I don't know if they're better now. Then they were not very good. And my parents had no outdoor lights, and we didn't have any neighbors, so there was no outdoor lights to guide us to the outhouse. And I don't ever remember us having flashlights, so I don't know what was up with that. When I was an adult, though, and I lived in a much fancier country neighborhood, the neighbors across the street had such a bright light that it shone from their house across their big fenced yard, across this really wide street, across our big yard, and into my daughter's bedroom and into the living room. And then later, when I moved to town for the first time in my life, I lived in this neighborhood where the houses were close together, and if two people held hands, you could, you know, touch each other's house. The neighbor would always turn on this light, his backlight at night, that was so bright that I could walk downstairs through my house, and I'm sure I could have cooked an entire meal in my kitchen at 1 a.m. without turning on any of my lights. It was that bright. And I'm sure that this light made my neighbors feel completely safe. That is the myth that we tell ourselves, that light makes us feel safe. That all those things that lurk in this dark, those terrifying things of my childhood, stay away if we turn on the lights. And this actually, they don't actually think this is true. Research says that the connection between light and safety is extremely tenuous. It's not clear that lights keep away the people who want to steal your things. In fact, if the lights are on, it's much easier to steal your things. It's easier to write graffiti on your walls if there's lights. They have shown. And they actually think keeping buildings dark is better because when the lights go on, people think, oh, there's something wrong, and they call the police or they do something about it. What is for absolutely sure is true is that it is natural that dark comes. It is absolutely a normal part of light. Dark just is. Each day is followed by night. And the long days of summer in the northern hemisphere are followed by the long nights of winter. Here in Portland, today, we're going to have 8 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, and we're going to have 14 hours and 10 minutes of night and darkness. And by the solstice, we're going to get another 8 minutes of darkness. And we are so busy lighting this up. We string colored lights on our houses, spread lights around Wolf. We add candles and other lights to our living rooms. I have a Christmas tree and lights around my windows inside. We light more fires. We certainly have at my house. All December, we light up the physical darkness of winter. We push it far from us as it extends its time over us. But we aren't just afraid of the darkness of night. It's those other darknesses that scare us even more. Fear, pain, loneliness, injustice, rejection, anger, emptiness, hunger, despair, depression, hopelessness. It's been a really difficult year. These darknesses and others have descended upon us so much more than other years. And the darkness can be terrifying. We can't see in the dark. We can't see where we are. We can't see where we are going. We can't see what is coming. We can't see how to get away. Everything that we've planned, the maps we've made in our minds, everything, nothing works. The virus has been so unknowable for most of its existence, with confusing and changing information, and while it's getting better, it's still true. Racism, which has been so much a part of the conversation this year, feels so insidious, so cruel, and so tangled, so hard to know how to fix and heal. The destruction we've seen to democracy, policies that support Unitarian Universalist values, and the earth are simply unfathomable to most of us. And the future, and how these might be transformed and changed, is simply unknowable. For months, we have lived with such darkness. Our reactions have been all over. At least mine have, and I've seen that truth in many of you and my friends and family. They've been from fear to resignation to denial to anger to sometimes acceptance and then back again over and over. Fear of the dark can be really dangerous. This is true of literal dark, actually. Our bodies actually evolved to live in darkness. And all this light that we've surrounded ourselves with has thrown us off our circadian rhythms. And this has worn down our immune systems. We are more now susceptible to the common cold and other illnesses. We're more prone to certain kinds of cancers. And some think that one of the reasons that we weigh more is because of all of the light around us. It makes our bodies not work the way they were created to work. Our fear of the emotional and spiritual dark is actually even more dangerous to us. When faced with such dark, our reaction is often to run or fight or numb out. We break up with friends or family or organizations. We pick fights or we rage about things. We use drugs or alcohol or sugar or spend too much money or get busier and busier so we can't pay attention. We disappear into television or bad novels. And none of these are really healthy choices. There are other ways, fortunately. We can actually learn to welcome the dark and all of the gifts that it brings. The dark isn't always scary. It doesn't necessarily hide bad things. That's our imagination that hides bad things in the dark for us. It isn't always a metaphor for difficult times. It just means we don't know where we are or what's happening or what the plan is. The dark can also be really warm and cozy and comforting. I'm sure many of us have experienced that recently, where you're in your house without many lights, on the couch, all cuddled up. It's one of my favorite things. You can see stars in the dark. The darker, the better. You can sleep the best in the dark and dream such amazing dreams. You can find new possibilities in the dark when the usual ways don't show themselves. Darkness can be an invitation to stillness, which is our theme this month. In the dark, seeds are nourished and they find the courage to crack open so that they can sprout and come above ground. Babies grow in the dark. That's where creativity blossoms. We can't see it. It happens in the dark, somewhere in our bodies, in connection with the world somehow. Unconscious completely happens in the dark. The dark, both the warm and comforting dark and the challenging, painful dark, are times of transformation. One of the most important spiritual books on the emotional and spiritual dark was written by John the Cross in the late 16th century. John was a monk and became an active in reforming the convents and monasteries of his time. The church authorities were not amused. After many warnings, he was abducted by the church leadership and thrown into a monastery prison. There, his jailers fed him small portions of bread and water, did not allow him to bathe, and released him from his cell only to be methodically beaten by a group of fellow monks. After 2 months, he was put into solitary confinement, where only a sliver of light came into the cell. He lived there for 9 months until he escaped. John's life, we would probably all agree, had fallen completely apart. He was helpless and suffered physical pain and emotional anguish. Furthermore, he had devoted his life to God. And where was God in this horror? What John learned is he couldn't exactly find God. He couldn't grab on to God and find his way to a better place. He didn't discover that God had a plan or that God would hold him in his pain and save him if he had faith. Instead, he learned that God is nothing, that God is no thing. Since God is not a thing, God cannot be defined and grasped or fulfill roles such as saving that humans had attributed to the deity. Instead, he said, he found that God could only be encountered. He spent his 11 months in the physical and painful dark, learning how to encounter God and leaving behind his desire to find and grasp for a God that he could understand. So what might John's revelations mean to us as 21st century Unitarian Universalists who lack any affinity for God language or got the God concept of John the Cross? The basic lesson, I think, still applies. When we find ourselves in the emotional and spiritual dark, we learn that what we grasped and believed was true about how life and the world worked isn't true. We learned that what we grasped onto to guide us wasn't real. It was no thing, nothing, instead of something real. These were stories that made us feel in control and know how to act so that we would have a good life. Maybe we had believed if we took care of ourselves, we wouldn't get sick, our bodies wouldn't fall apart, and that COVID-19 and other ailments would not haunt us. Or that if we were a good person and did the right thing, nothing horrible would happen to us. It's that if we worked hard for social and climate justice, that we would see real changes in our lifetimes. When we are in the dark and let ourselves be there without fleeing or pushing away, we learn something else entirely, says John the Cross. We learn that the rules about life that we grasped and held tightly to were not real. They were nothing. They were nothing. They couldn't get us out. It turns out if we take great care of ourselves, we can get sick with COVID-19 or cancer or get in a car wreck. If we are the best person we know how to be, we can still suffer grievous loss and pain. If we worked hard for social and climate justice, those gains can be easily lost. All we have, according to John the Cross, is to truly experience our lives and to sometimes experience something else, something undefinably greater that we can never name or understand. What happens in a dark night, says the great spiritual teachers and a few modern psychologists as well, is to discover we live in a world that can hurt us and we cannot control. If all goes well as we traverse the night, they tell us we come out the other side kinder and more compassionate and loving. We discover there are no other meaningful ways of being. What hurts you blesses you, says Rumi. Darkness is your candle. What is required is to learn to sit still in the dark, the winter dark, the warm dark, without lighting it, the painful dark, without running from it. What is required is to just be still and feel the dark nestle in around you, whether it is soft and kind or painful or scary, and just pay attention with openness and love. What do I experience in this moment? Is something dying? Is something being born? Might I offer a gentle push or a shift or a deep breath? Maybe the sprouting seeds needs to be watered with tears. Or maybe the birthing baby wants to be welcomed with a dance and laughter. Maybe I must just sleep and dream. Or call an old friend and tell them a story. Maybe there's nothing to do but just love myself in the dark. I can't know any of these things unless I pause and sit still and pay close attention. I did not make a mad dash for the outhouse every night of my childhood. When I was older, I came to savor the night air. I loved it crisp and cold in the winter and soft and cool in the summer. Even more, I loved the expanse of sky, which was a lush field of stars and the Milky Way a splash of celestial cream. I would come out of the house shivering, barely awake, surly at my parents for this discomfort. And then I would pause, breathing in the scent of the season, my eyes widening at the glory of the night, utterly caught in the miracle of being alive. May it be so.
Dona nobis pacem, pacem. Dona nobis pacem.
Dona nobis pacem, pacem. Dona nobis pacem.
Dona
Dona nobis pacem. Dona nobis pacem. Dona nobis pacem. Dona nobis pacem. Pacem. Dona nobis pacem.
Our benediction is from Ralph Waldo Emerson. When it is dark enough, you can see the stars. We extinguish the flame of this chalice, but not the warmth or inspiration of our faith, nor the commitment to our principles. These we will carry with us until we meet again.